Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Andy Troy Show, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. For the next 60 minutes, I'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight's guests are Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Little Anthony, Fangoria Magazine's Tony Timpone, and promoter Charles Rosenay. But first, our shameless plugs. For those of you who haven't read my anti-aging book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, there's no time like the present. It's always the right time to stay young and get healthy. Also, if you're going to live a long time, you might as well enjoy it. So check out my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, on how to improve men's sexual performance through exercise. Both are available on Amazon.com and my website, AndyTroy.com. Remember that if you bring my book to any of my events, I will be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, our next event will be our first Casablanca cocktail party, modeled after the classic Hollywood film. It will feature a great selection of Mediterranean wines at the discounted price of $6 a glass, along with the music and movies of the era. The date will be Thursday, April 21st from 6 to 10 p.m. at Bazaar Bistro, 4 West 19th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. It'll be a great night, so come join us. The details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, TastingNYC.com. The Andy Troy Show has a group on Facebook that contains links to previous shows as well as pictures of all our past guests. Check it out by punching The Andy Troy Show into your Facebook browser. My good friend and producer John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, has a CD called La Voce Mia. Order your copy today at johnnymandolin.com or call E. Rossi at 212-226-9254 and they'll hook you up. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods and or services to our vast listening audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. Okay, this is going to be an unusually cool show today. First, we would like to bring in the second Rock and Roll Hall of Famer in the history of the show.
Where'd he go?
The legendary Little Anthony.
I want his autograph. Can I get his autograph?
Can someone give Anthony a pen?
Where did he go? I want to get his autograph. Where did Anthony go? Oh, that's me, huh?
Oh, boy.
So what was that experience like, anyway? What is it like being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
That's great. Because you've been accepted by your peers. And no matter what happens, we'll always be there, immortalized in that room, as long as they're there. And then it comes to take it away. But when you get everybody together that you've... And I'm talking about, like, Paul McCartney and Smokey Robinson and Elvis Presley. When you are equal with them, because your body of work has put you in the position to be accepted by the Hall of Fame, that's great. That's the same as like with the baseball Hall of Fame, or the football Hall of Fame, or the hockey Hall of Fame, anybody's Hall of Fame. That means that everybody says your work and your body of work is superb.
Oddly enough, I'm not yet in any Halls of Fame.
Well, you got to keep trying, Troy.
Charles is trying to campaign for me.
Hall of Shame.
Charles will help you. He'll help you. He'll do it. Charles is big time promoter. You got to talk to him.
I've got to speak to him. Then it's really not worth it.
Yes, the man is amazing. I mean, he can make you a star.
Have your people talk to our people.
Right. Now, speaking of Smokey, he was the guy who actually kind of inducted you in there, right?
Well, yeah, we've been friends, intimate friends, him and the guys. We've known each other since we were kids. Like, in fact, in 1959, we met him when he was trying to get a record deal. And he had Barry Gordy with him. At that time, it was with Brunswick Records.
He eventually got one of those, right?
Yeah. And he was there in the George Gomez's office when I first met him as a kid.
Okay. And you still in touch with Smokey? How's he doing?
Yeah, I talked to him. I'm a name dropping. I talked to him about 3 weeks ago. He's doing us a favor. He's going to narrate our DVD that we did at the Hilton concert last year. So he's going to narrate it with this company that came in and filmed it. So, and then we talk about stuff all the time. We play golf together, too.
Now, not only are you one of the great names in music history, but you're a big horror buff. Is this correct?
Well, I don't think I'm a horror buff, but I'm a horror guy.
Am I wrong again?
No. Back in the day. Now, I'm not talking about the stuff, let's see, that came out in the early 70s. But, baby, that stuff in the 40s and 30s, it's my kind of... As a kid coming up, that's what scared me. That's what gave me interest, you know? Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff,
Vincent Price, Lon Chaney.
Oh, Vincent. Oh, I love it. He was so subtle. Mm. He was subtle in his horror. You know, when you know, people still talk about that thing he did with the fly. Help me! Help me!
It helps to have a high voice for
yes,
this
you must
role.
Be able to do
they
that.
Could have used you for that.
They could have, but they didn't think about me. But I love that stuff. As a kid coming up, looking at WPIX, looking at CBS, The Late Show, in those days in New York, that's what came on in the middle of the night. You know, when kids are supposed to be in bed because you got to go to school the next day, not me, buddy. I was trying to watch that stuff when my mom and dad went to sleep. And I would turn it on. And you didn't know any given night it would come on. You know what I mean? It was just something about those guys, man, I can't put my finger on. They were personalities as opposed to Horror Today. Now, Horror Today is more graphic. Like, you know, guts coming out of people, weird stuff. But those guys, it was subtle. They had to make you scared just by their performance.
Actually, I've seen a list of some of your favorite films. Mm. My favorite horror film was Rosemary's Baby.
I saw it. It was interesting. The devil and all that was the father and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I went to see it. It was a little more intellectual for my unintellectual mind at the time. Yes. But I did it because it was there, you know. But I dug it. I mean, but it was a long...
I went with my group from Mensa to see it, so
really?
I was fine.
You were fine?
Oh, yes.
Did
my
you
Mensa
find out
group
that the baby was the devil's kid?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's terrible.
You're opposed to that whole raising devils for children, I see.
No. Well, no. To me, it's the performance that turns me on. And it was very suspenseful. But for me, it doesn't match Bela Lugosi when he... you hear all the music, it is the children of the night. I mean, a little thing like a line like that, and I'm a kid going, I'm running for cover, man. I don't know.
Well, speaking of horror,
yeah.
We have Tony Timpone with us,
that's a lead
head
in.
Cook and bottle washer at Van Gorian Magazine. You're actually the editor emeritus. Is that what that's called?
Yeah, that's right, Andy.
What does that mean?
Well, for 27 years, I was the editor-in-chief of the magazine, but it came time to...
Was this a demotion of some kind?
No, it was actually a promotion because our company started a video-on-demand and DVD line, horror stuff, and I'm basically managing that, finding movies to put out under the Fangoria banner. Plus, I manage a bunch of special Fangoria projects. We're doing screenings, books. We're doing some movies this year, so there's a lot to do, so... the daily grind of putting a magazine together is no longer my responsibility, which is great because I don't have those pressing deadlines on me all the time. So now I can concentrate on, you know, making Fangoria more of a household name if we can.
Now, obviously, you're a big horror fan. What's the first horror movie that made an impression on you? Like, what's the first thing you remember being scared of as a kid?
Well, it's funny. Little Anthony was bringing up PIX, and I used to watch Chiller Theater.
Yeah, Chiller Theater. Yeah.
And Creature Features.
And Creature Features. Yeah, and one of the first things I remember as a kid, my dad making me go to bed, was the original 1931 Dracula with Bela Lugosi.
Oh.
And the best part is the beginning. That's the scariest part of the movie. Yeah. And then it kind of gets talky. But after that scary opening at the castle, my dad sent me to bed. Okay, that's it. And that was one of the first horror movies I saw as a kid.
Did you know, to me... You know, people don't realize that music at that time was very effective in putting over that kind of a fear in you. Now,
right.
What would you think? Swan Lake? Da, 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 da.
That terrified you as a youth?
Terrified me.
That was the only piece of music in Dracula.
It's almost like it's going, oh, something is not right here.
Yeah. I was scared by the birds, and he was scared by Swan Lake.
I was scared by the birds, too. The birds scared me.
That's the first movie I remember.
Really?
My grandmother took me to see that.
It freaked me out, man.
Yeah, that still holds up today. It's still
right.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty graphic, too, for the time.
Oh, man, yeah.
Speaking of which, another movie...
Hitchcock.
I know. I saw that Psycho was on your list. I just went out and saw that again so we could chat about it.
Now you see again, me being a singer and I'm dealing with music, I'm listening to the music and the soundtrack as well as what's happening. And all I can remember to this day was...
the shrieking violins.
These are all soundtracks. He could be blind and enjoy these films.
But you know what? The music scared me. I mean, that's... What it told me was something really bad was happening here. You know, you can make an asylum movie, and you could be stabbing, like, blood flying, and you go, oh, that's too bad. But that music made it sound like this is really, yes. really bad.
Yeah, that was probably the greatest horror score of all time, Bernard Herrmann.
But you know what seemed strange to me? In that movie, he is a taxidermist. Yet he did such a lousy job on his mother.
Did you see his mother? Yeah. His mother looked like him.
Could it have been him?
I'm not letting him stuff my parrot. Interesting. So we also have Charles here. Charles, what do you have to say for yourself?
I got to tell you, Psycho is like on everybody's top 10 list. You know, I was mentioning to Tony, we do a online horror column where we do a top 10 list from celebrities every other week, be it, you know, William Shatner or Little Anthony or Greg Hawks from The Cars, you name it. You know, we try to get every celebrity to a top 10 list. Without fail, Psycho's on everybody's list.
Yep. It's my number one favorite.
And not alone. See, a lot of people like that damn movie. But, you know, it's drama and pure horror. It's kind of a different type of a world because, mm-hmm. I mean, when the alien came out, to me, that was horror. I mean, mm-hmm. when that thing came out of that guy's chest, it was horrible.
It jumped, yeah.
I mean, and I went 15 rows back because I'm a very emotional dude, man. I'm going to respond, and I ran.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think men can relate to anything coming flying out of us.
I mean,
women is upset by that film?
I don't know. But to me, it was, oh, no. I made it out of there. I had to get my act together to come back and look at it.
Now, getting back to your career.
Oh, I have a career?
That old thing, yeah.
Yeah.
How did the Imperials get together?
I like being a kid in those days. We all live in the same neighborhood. You know, the urban kids rap, you know, but it's the same pattern. That's what they do. At the time I came up as a kid, singing groups was the thing of those days. And it really started from the Ink Spots. Then they went into the Orioles, and the Orioles came in with another kind of a sound, and it was different. And because they used a backbeat on the drum, pop. No one was using that because up to that time it was really jazz and was using brushes and stuff. So when we heard that, it really gave us an attitude of saying, wow, man, that's really different. So everybody got turned on, and we got turned on as kids because we were all singing or doing something, but we didn't think, well, we should get together and sing. We just were singing one way or another. Like Ernest was at the Herald Tribune Fresh Air Fund. He was singing the choir, and I'm doing gospel. My mom was a gospel singer. I'm singing in churches. So everybody was different than Clarence was playing the piano, you know. And to come together like that was because of the era. It was what you did. The groups were coming out, like the Flamingos, the Moonglows. And all of a sudden you go, oh, man, that sounds good. I mean, that rocks. You don't know what it is. You know, and next thing you know, you want to do that. So.
And who nicknamed you Little Anthony? I think someone actually gave you that name.
Alan Freed.
Right. How did that come about?
Well, legend goes, I heard that when they bought him the record in 58, the record promoter, he listened to it personally. In those days, jocks listened to everything themselves. They were the kings. They were the kings. And he told the promoter that, oh, man, that girl can sing. And the promoter says, no girl. It's a guy. He says, a guy? She's got to be real little. Uh-huh. The rest is history.
Interesting. Alan Freed wasn't so big either, was he? So what's he talking about?
He was about a little bit taller than me, now, you know, maybe 5'9", something like that.
Yeah. So he's little like me, basically.
Yeah.
Cool. Speaking of which, let's get back to Charles, because we've hardly heard anything from
him. Wait. Speaking of little, let's get back to Charles. Was that the segue?
I gotta use something.
Yeah, but you can call me Anthony if you want to.
I'm a little rock and roll and a little horror. You know, it all comes together here.
Now, you're a big fan of horror films also.
Oh,
what
yeah.
was the first one that made an impression on you?
It was the Universal films on those same channels. Growing up in, you know, The Bride of Frankenstein, the Dracula, you know, all the classic Universals. But I love it straight through. I mean, you know, The Exorcists and Halloween, right mm-hmm. up through Saw. I love, you know, the splatter stuff too. So I don't end with the classic guys. I kept going.
So what was the most shocking thing you've seen in a film?
I saw a porn with you in it, and it was just unbelievable.
That's really disgusting.
I'm lying. I'm sorry.
You're lying. You didn't watch that movie, you're saying.
I did.
I sent it to you. What's wrong with you?
No, I didn't. I haven't opened it yet.
I wasted my only spare copy.
You mean it wasn't him? Oh, shit.
You know, I think, I can't remember if I read The Exorcist before I saw it or if I saw it before I read it, but that one scared the bejesus out of me. I mean, it just, you know, I'm afraid. It's the only movie I took my 3-year-old to see Drag Me to Hell, which was, you know, a really good movie, but I'm insane for bringing a kid to it. And I still won't let him see The Exorcist, and he's seen everything.
All right, I think Betty, speaking of people who scare me, is our engineer, wants me to go to commercial, and we'll be back shortly with more of this stuff. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Marianne Morrison. Join me, uncensored and live, with entertaining and provocative guests from celebrities to world-renowned entrepreneurs with hot topics and hot talk. Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, high-definition digital radio broadcasting to the world. Only on the Chentani Broadcasting Network.
Hello, my name is Anthony Teresa, owner and producer of Blue Knight Recording Studio in beautiful Orange County, California, just outside Los Angeles. As a guitarist, vocalist, bassist, session player, producer, and engineer, I have either played or recorded on over 400 CD projects. Let me tell you, it's not easy to record your own music. My goal is to help you to be the best you can be behind the mic and in the tracking room. We'll get the best possible sounds from your voice and instruments. Do you need musicians? I've got them. The top session players in Southern California and Los Angeles. Let's make your recording project a reality. You can contact me by phone at 949-338-0293. That's 949-338-0293. Or contact me at email at catduo@earthlink.net. Looking forward to hearing from you. Take care and have a great week.
Do you love great homemade Italian food? Do you hate the long wait at fancy restaurants or the overpriced menus? Then check out Giovanna's restaurant on the Upper East Side, East Harlem, at 1567 Lexington Avenue between 100 and 101st Street. Giovanna's has fine homemade pastas, meat dishes, artisan pizzas, all handcrafted by Master Chef Fernando Davino. Giovanna's also features a selection of over 200 wines. Experience great food, friendly service, sensible prices, and no long waits at Giovanna's. Local delivery is also available. Call 212-360-6300 for more information. Giovanna's restaurant is just 3 short blocks north of the 6th train 96th Street subway station. Street parking is also available. Chentani Broadcasting loves Giovanna's. That's why we broadcast live from here. Check out Giovanna's restaurant at 1567 Lexington Avenue between 100 and 101st Street. You'll be glad you did.
Okay, we're back with the modern master of horror, Tony Timpone. So, Tony, what scares you in a movie?
Well, if it taps
besides
into,
me in a movie,
yeah, if it taps into something deeply disturbing and you know goes into, you know, it's stuff that could really happen. You know, psychological horror, not necessarily, you know, guy in a mask with a knife, but something that's very real.
How about Hostel? How did you feel about that?
I thought it was okay. Yeah, I thought it was a little over the top and got silly at times and was a little implausible, but I thought it was very well done. I think the director, that Eli Roth, is very, very talented.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed that. Now, do you prefer violence that's inferred or that's a little more blatant? Horror that's, you know, more inferred or more obvious.
I don't think you need gore to make it scary. A good example is this movie that's playing now that's a hit called Insidious. It's PG-13 and there's not a drop of blood in the film, yet it's completely terrifying. You know, it takes a lot to scare me in a movie because I've seen thousands of horror movies probably and I'm pretty desensitized to most horror films, but that was actually scary and here it was. You know, there's no gore, no blood and guts. It's just suspense, characterization, and atmospherics. Well, it's really terrifying.
One of my recent favorites was The Human Centipede. Did you see that?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't scary, but it was so over the top. I enjoyed it,
You know, to me, in movies, there's good sick and bad sick. That was great sick. Did you see that?
Charles, people either love it or hate it.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
There's no in-between with that.
Yeah.
There was an in-between, and she actually, if you see the movie, you'll see who she is, actually. Anthony, did you get to see that? I would recommend that film.
No, man, it's funny. See, you guys are all young bucks, you know what I mean?
We're young with no bucks.
No bucks, young and no bucks. That's good. It's a funny thing as you, well, I can only speak from my perspective, but as you get older, your sophistication mentally, you're looking for another kind of a stimulation, what Tony was saying. I'm an intellect in my mind. Maybe I'm just a Brooklyn guy, but in my mind, I'm an intellect. So I tend to want that, how do you put it? I need to have the storyline and everything built up to a point where it crescendos to whatever that is that.
Again, you're back to music.
My word. Well, could be. I don't know. It gets back to that. I don't know.
But he's crescendoing.
I tend to look, well, when you talk about, you know, things coming at you, you said, what is it? Is something inferred or is something that you do? I like to infer something that makes me think. Wait a minute, this can actually happen. Right. That is my horror world. Could it happen? Not opposed to blood flying this way and somebody's cutting off somebody's head.
An esophagus flying across the room.
It doesn't rock my world.
Charles, are you crescendoing? Keep your hands on the table,
by
the way.
I'm crescendoing. We're up here.
Okay.
So. But I think a lot of the same joys that you get out of a horror movie, you get out of music. I think there's a lot of similarities. The thing about horror, why a lot of people say it's successful, of course, is because you're safe in that theater. That's not really going to happen to you. So taking that out of the equation, there's a lot of people who just love horror movies the way they live and breathe and love, you know, rock and roll or soul or rap or whatever their particular love is. And I think there's that same kind of avid, if someone loves something that much, be it the Beatles, be it, you know, Little Anthony, be it, you know, John Carpenter movies, they're so avid about it. You got to love that, too.
Yeah. Also, I think, rock and roll and horror are alike in the sense that they're the forbidden. Growing up, your parents didn't want you watching the horror movies, they didn't want you listening to rock and roll.
Not my mom.
Oh, yeah?
My Bronx mom loved them both. She force-fed me both of them.
Oh, lucky you.
That's how I got into horror. My mother used to take me to movies. Like, the first nudity I saw in movies was, like, The Velvet Vampire. My mother would drag me to Baskin and Robbins, and we'd get, like, on Sunday and go to see, like, a double feature of vampire movies.
That's it.
My mother's favorite things were professional wrestling and horror movies. A little 4-foot Jewish woman.
I think your mom and my mom were the same person.
You look a little familiar to me, actually. I was told there was a demonic brother we kicked out.
Moving along.
Yes. Okay. So I know that I actually have a connection with you two guys through your show, your big festival Rock Con last summer.
Yeah, that was pretty special.
How was that for you, Anthony?
They're very interesting. You know, when you can go throw your wares out there and sell it. What was more interesting to me was meeting people that I had not seen in years. Or, for that matter, I didn't even know who they was. You know, Al Jardine and I've been friends since the day number one.
From the Beach Boys, yeah.
Yeah. So it was cool, and we were like next to each other. So that was cool. But it was a lot of people. I never had the opportunity to meet.
You didn't know the guy who played second saxophone in the 1910 Fruit Gum Company?
No. Didn't even know the
guy. Amazing. He's not well versed.
There was Mary Wilson. No, there was Tommy great. James. There was great names.
No, there was great stuff.
Tony, who might not know, I saw Rock Con as the rock and roll equivalent to Comic Con or Chiller or one of the horror shows, but for rock and rollers. This was the first time we had this many stars. And the best part of it for me as a promoter was not the people coming in paying to come in or selling the autographs. What was great for me was seeing Little Anthony reconnect with, I don't know who, Jay and the Americans, seeing these people who hadn't seen each other probably for 30 or 40 years and embracing and, you know, hey, do you remember playing together at the Apollo? Do you remember playing together at, you know, Carnegie Hall? That was amazing to see.
That's what we did.
Really
we talked
cool.
to each other and compared notes. And anytime an entertainer can do that, or anybody that's in the field of sports or rock and roll or whatever it might be, that's a unique thing. So we really didn't. What happened was we have all these people sitting literally across from each other. And so, I said to you, I used to run from my little booth, and I'd cover the whole place. I'd go to other booths. I was more interested in what they were doing and saying. And they would tell me, well, say, man, you do this, you do that. I'd run back. But just to talk to those guys was great. It was just a nice, something that I really enjoyed a lot.
Well, the highlight of the weekend for me was hanging out in the hotel bar with Mary Wilson from the Supremes, the cowboy from the Village
Randy
People,
Jones.
And the drummer from the Turtles.
Yeah, right.
Where do you get that collection together?
Never,
anywhere. It's great. So are you planning a follow-up there?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at some of the casinos in Atlantic City, and we're putting it off a year, and we're going to try to put together a whole new lineup of, you know, great rock and rollers and do it again a weekend of 101 stars next time.
Okay, do you have any sense of when that'll be or no?
Probably 2012. We don't have a date or a location yet.
By then I'll have blown all my money. I won't be able to go to Atlantic City.
No, by then you'll have saved up for getting everyone's
blown
order.
All my money.
All right.
Anyway, you do a lot of festivals. What else do you have coming up? I know you had Beat Expo a little while ago.
Yeah. We're actually working on Mayhem in Manhattan. A weekend of horror, not like a convention, but where we do activities and have parties and go see some shows. We do the Dracula Tour to Transylvania, which we've been doing now for 12 years.
Can I go?
Yes, we'd love to have you go.
He's actually going to bring people to one of my events, I think. We're going to try to put something together.
Next month we have a ghost tour to Scotland. So we do a lot of fun niche things. And then on the other spectrum, we do the Beatle tours to Liverpool. So a lot of travel things, a lot of, you know, really fun. It's at www.toursandevents.com, all the promotions we do.
Can you do a Beatle tour to Transylvania?
We're working on figuring how to do that, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because you do tours to Transylvania, right? Vlad's
That's
castle?
Right. That's right. We go to the castles. We go where Vlad was born.
Vlad!
We mix the fiction of Dracula with the legend and the history of Vlad.
Well, that's cool, because I'm a big Vlad historian to my Uncle Vlad, because I'm half Romanian.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you are?
I am. That's half. That's why if I go out into sunlight, I don't dissolve, but I do sneeze, actually.
Now I know why you like horror movies.
Yes.
Well, it's in your bloodline. DNA.
It is. But let's get back to Tony, who's got a lot of interesting things going on as well. So, I know you make a number of films with the company. What do you have coming out?
Well, we have 8 movies that are out on DVD right now and that have been showing up on the Movie Channel and Showtime called the Fangoria Fright Fest. And people could find out what those titles are at www.fangoriafrightfest.com. And one of the movies is called Fragile. It stars Calista Flockhart from Brothers and Sisters and Ally McBeal. Another one's called Pig Hunt, which is this over-the-top...
Can you pronounce that again?
Pig Hunt.
This is a family show. What are you trying to do? He saw my porn movie, too, obviously. So
that's been fun. And then here in New York City, we host free movies every month or so down at the Cinema Village, which is one of my favorite repertory houses. Our next show will be Wakewood, which is a new Hammer film. Remember Hammer films from the 1950s? The Dracula.
That's what my mother used to take me to.
Yeah.
Perverted
this is
old
the new Hammer, and this is a sort of a Pet Cemetery kind of movie. Mm. We're going to be showing that at the Cinema Village. And next Tuesday or Wednesday at the Sony Lincoln Square, we're doing a special promo night on this new film called Priest, which is a science fiction horror vampire movie starring Paul Bettany. And we're going to show clips from the film in 3D. And the cast and crew in the film are going to be showing up for a little meet and greet with the fans. So you could get to meet Paul Bettany from Legion and A Beautiful Mind. And the director of the film will be there. And we'll probably have drinks and food and stuff. And that's going to be a free event. So people can find out about all these Fangoria-type events and sign up for our newsletter at www.fangoria.com.
Now, Charles just pulled up a picture. How did you get a picture of me when I woke up this morning?
No,
what was that?
I was listening to what he's saying. I'm thinking independent films. I've done, a couple of these myself. And I just finished a short called The Confessional, where I finally get to be a zombie. I've been a vampire.
Oh,
I've always wanted to be a zombie.
Oh, you want to be a zombie?
I've been killed in films, but this is the first time I got to kill in a film.
Do you want to be a zombie, Anthony? Does that interest you?
No, I want to be a Dracula.
He wants to be Bella.
I want to be him.
Because you've done some acting, right?
A lot of people don't know that. I did a couple of film. I did TV, a lot of plays.
What was your favorite role? What was the best thing you did, you say?
A thing that I did with Ed Harris. Ed Harris was just starting out. called Are You Looking at Gene Donosky Theater in L.A. in 1979 and won an award for that. That was an intense play, man. A lot of work, a lot of mental drain. It's about drug addicts and the whole bit. And I played his buddy. I actually won the role, you know, by audition. And then I played his buddy, who really was his supplier, you know. And Ed was this dreamer that had all these other dreams, and I would fulfill those dreams with drugs. What did he give me that part for? But anyway.
You stopped dealing now, is that correct?
I stopped. And I gave it up. And anyway.
I'm going to have to call someone else now?
You got to do it. I know somebody if you need to.
Do you? Could you connect me?
Yeah, sure. Anyway.
I thought Charles was the guy who brought
people. I have nothing
together.
To do with that. But, you know, an actor, listen to this, an actor, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, one of the best voices in music history, could have been a professional baseball guy. This guy is like the Renaissance man that people don't realize.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It helps being short when you play baseball. I remember Eddie Gaetel.
That was short, too, man.
Okay, well, we're going to...
short stop.
Well, Betty again wants me desperately to go to commercial break, but we will come back and we will hear more stuff.
Alrighty.
You're listening to the Cent'anni Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital stereo.
Broadcasting to the world. Would you like to know what's going on in the Italian American community and stay in touch, even if you don't live in Little Italy? There's a way to do it. There's a great newspaper out called GIA, the Giornale Italo Americano. This newspaper is distributed nationally and comes out weekly, and you can subscribe by going to their website at www.giamondo.com, that's GIAMONDO.com, or call 718-592-2196. Check out GIA for all your information on what's happening in the Italian American community. It's published in both Italian and English. It's a great way to read and follow up and practice your Italian as well. Check out GIA on the internet at www.giamondo.com. GIA newspaper, the Italian American newspaper for today.
Yo, this is Fat Elder Cannoli over here, and you are listening to the Cent'anni Broadcasting Network. High definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
Okay, we're back. The guests are chatting amongst themselves. I always like to see that. It's a very friendly group. I think Anthony is.
Who needs the host?
I think Anthony's recommending a new connection to Charles.
Well, yeah,
I am. What? You know, we have so many similar interests between baseball and horror and rock and roll that it's hard not to be talking about.
Yeah, something. We were talking about it before we came on. We were talking baseball.
Do you know? Do you remember who Eddie Gaetel was?
No.
He was a midget who played baseball for one at bat.
Oh, that guy that went back for the White Sox.
Yeah.
It was
like I think it was like during World War II, and Bill Veeck had a midget come out and crouch.
He's been known to do some strange things.
And he had
things.
No strike zone.
Right.
But so he swung walked. Anyway?
He walked.
didn't he bring back Satchel Paige for a minute?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Satchel was, I think, 130 or something.
He was like 125 or something.
So, okay, we don't want to leave Tony out because he is the master of horror here. Just, could be a problem for me. So, Tony,
yes.
Tell us about your website. There's some interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah, we're one of the top horror websites, Fangoria.com, where we run all the latest horror news, reviews, interviews, exclusive trailers. We do a lot of video interviews with horror people that we put up. That's the Fangoria TV component of the website. So it's we like connecting horror fans, with the horror community, and we update it constantly, 24/7. And it's a great thing. But more people look at the website than look at the magazine now. Of course, the internet is where it's at. Even though the magazine itself is still selling as good as it ever did, and if not better, and the advertising is still going strong. And part of that is because of the website. The website brings a lot of new readers to the magazine. So that's definitely a great thing.
So the economy hasn't hurt you guys much, huh?
No, that's something. And I noticed that at our conventions. As bad as the economy was, people still had the money to come to our shows and, get autographs and meet celebrities. And the horror films are more popular than ever. The economy, even though that's the scariest thing you could think of, it hasn't scared people away from horror entertainment. It's horror has always been an escape for people. So perhaps because of these bad economic times, horror is more popular because you need that escape.
I guess you can't keep the dead down, huh?
No. Yeah, no way.
No. So, Anthony, I don't want to neglect your career here because you've done some great stuff. We're talking about a horror, but...
Some people say my career is a horror.
Well, we don't let them in. Tears on My Pillow. This was like a huge hit for you, and it was like the first record you guys put out, right?
Yeah. Well, not the first record we put out, the first successful record.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Tears on My Pillow. You know, we were in the right place at the right time. Actually, I was in another group in high school called the DuPonts. And Clarence was my neighbor. Well, he had a group called the Chesters. Really, it's the Imperials. They changed the name. Didn't like that name. I wonder why. Anyway, he said, man, I can get a deal, but we need a lead singer. We just really don't have anybody strong enough with us right now. Would you be interested in coming over to the city, over to 1650 Broadway, 51st? In those days, was really all the little independent record companies was in that building. And I thought, well, yeah, why not? What the heck? And I went with him. And we sang a song that Ernest wrote called Just Two Kinds of People in the World. And it was a success. And they signed us right on the spot. And then they threw a song at me called Tears in My Pillow that I'd heard briefly. And I didn't really know it, nor did we know it. I think I'm the first guy that ever sang a song and read the words, the lyrics. Because I couldn't memorize it that quick. And I did, but that was the beginning of who we became. George was a brilliant president of the record company, and he even told me, he says, hey, why don't you sing this how you talk? You talk so high, you know? And he says, sing it like way. And he said, who's your favorite singer? So I ran it down. Frankie Lyman, Nat Cole. He says, Nat Cole? He says, you know, Nat Cole enunciates everything so clear, so much clarity. I want you to try that with that high way you talk. And that really created something that wasn't happening in rock and roll in those days. You could recognize the lyric. Because it was, you don't remember me. You don't. With the T, with the apostrophe. There, and there it is. And no one was doing that. Well, the man was brilliant because he gave me a career.
You still sound like the old little Anthony.
Getting old, little Anthony.
This is little Anthony Mania. It's not the real one. He's an impersonator.
Give us a little I Think I'm Going Out of My Head. Take over. Give us a little I Think I'm Going Out of My Head.
Oh, that's too high.
Is that too high?
Can do it.
Charles can do it.
That. I cannot go beyond that.
Charles, can you do background vocals for him?
Sure. Go ahead.
Wait. Let me see if I can do it. Well, I think I'm going out of my head. Yes, I think I'm going out of my head. Over you. Over you. Enough is enough, guys.
Yeah, that was excellent.
That was great.
Excellent. We have people, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is recreating their songs on the show.
Really?
It's excellent.
Different, ain't it?
Yes, it is.
Horror and rock and roll. What a combination.
Alice Cooper. Having him on next.
That's horror.
Hey, there's a great rock and roll horror movie on cable Saturday night called Suck.
Oh,
that you
wow.
should look at with Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper is in it. Iggy Pop, a lot of rock and roll people.
He just got should have been long going in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's right. Yeah, a few weeks ago.
I voted for him.
All right,
Darling in Love. It was great. Great year.
Wow.
So, coming back to Hammer, which is one of my favorite houses.
Mm-hmm.
I was a big fan of the Christopher Lee Dracula movies. Which Dracula do you guys prefer? Lee, Lugosi, Frank Langella?
Who was the guy in Blackula? He was one of my favorites.
Oh, he was William Marshall.
William Marshall.
Yeah. William Marshall.
Yeah.
There was a voice. Great. Now, that guy had a great voice.
He was a theatrical actor. Yeah. He was a great Shakespearean actor.
You talk about
right.
black exploitation movies. This guy had blood on his teeth. It's horrible.
I saw him in a Bonanza episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on Star Trek.
Yeah,
he got around.
I love guys who were in things that you wouldn't expect. Like, I watched Psycho the other day, and I didn't realize Ted Baxter, was in there in like a little part. A cop.
Yeah, if you look at those movies, you always see somebody that becomes somebody, and they started there. But I tell you, man, like we were just talking about, it, I can't get, to this day in my house, I got every Dracula movie Bela Lugosi ever did. I even the stuff he did with Wood. Real bad stuff.
Ed Wood.
Yeah. I mean, really bad stuff.
It's so bad, it's great.
It was horrible.
I love the fact...
Talk about horror. That was horrible.
I love the fact in Plan 9... Bella died, making the movie, so they replaced him with his dentist. And they were like a foot different in height, and he just walked around with a cape in front of his face.
Right, like nobody would notice.
But we didn't notice. As kids, when we watched that at Chiller Theater, on Chiller TV or whatever, did we notice it?
No, I thought it was him.
Until we became, you know, intellectual about the horror stuff. You know, it was still Bella turned around to us.
I don't know, I could tell height back then.
Yeah, well, I wasn't that cerebral.
So that's come to another interesting point with horror films, guys. There's a new wave of horror films that are very cheaply made, low budget, but are very popular. What do you guys think of those compared to the big budget movies? Anthony,
I just can't get connected because, again, it goes back to my intellect, whatever that is. I want something to tell me why I'm scared. I don't want anything to say you're going to be scared because I'm going to do something to scare you. I want something to happen to me that says, oh, my goodness.
Great low-budget horror movie, Hard Candy.
I didn't see that, but I heard about that.
Patrick Wilson, who's in Insidious, is the star of that film.
The whole thing is two people in a house.
But see, you can't generalize because you can take a low-budget movie that might be brilliant and, you know, they've used their money wisely on a great soundtrack and some suspense, and it could blow away a big-budget loser. So you can't really generalize.
Going back to one that was so corny that it was really good, Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, of course.
It's one of the greats.
You remember them people? Come on. They look like somebody out of Halloween. But the storyline was so strong, you really said, ooh, that's not good.
Yeah, the film's still being imitated
to
this day.
You, Barbara.
Well, they did it, what, 9 times since then?
Yeah, that was a good wig she had on, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she deserved to be zombied, right?
That was the most annoying person in the history of movies.
Tell me,
we weren't rooting for her to get killed.
Absolutely.
Her and the kid in the wheelchair in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, have to go.
Oh, was Franklin? Oh, who wanted to see, talk about a high voice and an annoying guy? Not you, Anthony.
No, thank you.
But, that was really something. How do you guys like that movie, by the way?
I liked it.
Which one? Texas Chainsaw Massacre? That's still holds up.
The original.
Yeah, the original. There's not much blood in that movie.
It leaves a lot to the
imagination.
But again, they use...
They sort of,
this is what you got. Now you take it from here. Well, it didn't take me long to figure out this guy is no good. He's going to hurt somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, and then he throws that chainsaw and the whole bit, and you go, your imagination just runs away.
That's
with
right,
you.
Yeah.
You got to read about that movie, though. That was an amazing story. The mob financed it.
Yeah.
No one made any money. They absconded with the whole thing.
The two biggest
sources of mob money, like in the 70s, were that and Deep Throat. They made more money from that than they made from drugs.
Yeah. Wow. It's wild, isn't it?
Oh, by the way, someone just wrote in, very cool, him singing a cappella.
Of course. That was rare. That was amazing.
That was great. Yeah.
I'm going to release it as a bootleg next week. Come on.
Hey, very good. Remember me.
We could put a great one together. That and when they had Dominic Chianese singing Summer Wind.
Wow.
We could put that together. We could have that. Those could be the two sides of the single.
Oh, it should be the Andy Troy sessions all a cappella.
I'm BMI, guys. Don't forget. You do this.
Oh, yeah. He just wants a copy of it.
And during both of them, I play air drums, which is great on radio.
Air drums.
So I want to hear more about the tour to Transylvania. You've actually gone on that?
Yeah, I went on it. We opened up a haunted house in Connecticut a few years ago. But up until we did that, I went every year. I hosted it. I made sure everyone has a great time. My entertainment DJ background, I try to make sure that it's not just an educational, informative, daily, you know, senior citizen trip. I try to make the nights fun. You know, we have parties at night. We go to clubs.
You can't go to Transylvania and not have fun at night.
Absolutely, right.
You know, not really.
It's really amazing. The website is dractours.com. Go there and just read past tour reports from people who've gone on the trip and shared their experiences.
Post some links on my group's Facebook page so people can find all this stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to go to commercial break again. When we come back, we're going to make Anthony sing something.
No, you ain't.
No, we're not. We'll be back.
Ivy Love from L.A. to the U.K. ivylovemusic.com. High definition digital radio broadcasting to the world. Centenni Broadcasting.
If you love jazz, check out These Things We Dig, new CD by jazz sax, flute, and clarinet recording artist James Aldean on Sexton Records. James Aldean has recorded 7 CDs for Sexton Records and appears regularly in the New York metropolitan area, including the great venue, the Whiskey Cafe. These Things We Dig features some of the best jazz and bebop styles, with James fronting the band, complemented by such great players as Mike Fonella, Phil Jones, Bob De Benedette, Ron Naspo, and Wayne Thornton. You can get this new CD from Sexton Records by going to www.sexton.com. That's C-E-X-T-O-N.com. You can find out more about James Aldean at www.jldeanorchestra.com. For the best in jazz, it's Sexton Records, the audiophile jazz record label. Sexton.com.
You are listening to the Centenni Broadcasting Network, C-E-N-T-A-N-N-I Broadcasting.com, in high definition digital stereo.
Okay, we're back with our assortment of celebrities and me. So, Tony.
Yeah.
What else have you got coming up?
Well, again, next week we're doing a special Fangoria night at the Sony Lincoln Square on Broadway and 68th Street.
Am it's I allowed be, into that?
Excuse me?
Am I allowed into that?
You bet, you bet. Bring your posse.
My posse?
Yeah. Ooh. So we're going to show clips from a new 3D horror sci-fi movie called Priest. And the cast of the film is going to be there, including Paul Bettany, who is in Legion and A Beautiful Mind. He's going to be there, the director. We're going to have lots of free giveaways. It's going to be a cool event. We're going to show 3D clips from this new film from Screen Gems. The movie's based on a Tokyo Pop comic book series, also called Priest. So it looks like it's going to be a hot movie. We'll have the details at Fangoria.com this week, where you could also sign up for our newsletter and get the updates on the special events we'll be doing all spring.
What do you think of gimmicks in movies? I guess you can't do as much of that when you're going straight to video, but like the stomach distress bags they gave out,
yeah,
with Mark of the Devil.
That's right, that's right.
And, well, like that phony duplicate ending that they had with Mr. Sardonicus.
Yeah,
William Castle.
That's right,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Sardonicus.
Did you like that? I love that movie.
In Vegas, I used to watch that Mr. Sardonicus. I love that. Oh, man, yeah.
And they had the two endings, but only one actually existed.
Yeah.
Right.
Because no one voted for this guy to live.
Right.
It's like at the end of the movie, what is it, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Right.
Nobody wanted to see this guy again.
It was called the punishment poll.
Yes.
Yep.
And what about...
Well, now the biggest gimmick of all time, 3D, is more popular than ever. So some gimmicks are, you know, they stick around.
Is quadraphonic sound coming back? Should I get my 8-track player out of the closet or what? I probably have an 8-track.
Right after the Betamax.
I had a nice collection of 8-tracks, actually.
Wow.
My mother was wise enough to try to talk me into cassettes, but I was going for the more advanced technology.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
8-tracks, my goodness.
Those were horrible.
Couldn't you put them anywhere in your car? In no space.
You know what I would love? When it would get to the end of the track and it would get stuck and click and go back?
Yeah,
or the middle of a song, you'd get like Indigata Davida and it would be like 3 tracks. You'd have to wait 10 seconds before it clicked over. Do you like that kind of classic rock stuff, Anthony? You a big Iron Butterfly fan?
No, everything. Metallica was a group that got my attention.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
The thing about it is just some people just bang. It's just banging. But then there are some that the Black Sabbath is one of them that come out and you go, wait a minute, that ain't normal. You know?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I have a varied love of music. In fact, this is crazy. I'm an opera fan.
You're an opera fan.
I'm going next year to La Scala. yeah, to see Puccini, some of the Puccini thing. I'm setting up for a vacation. Puccini and Verdi. And now you ask, how can a black kid out of Brooklyn have Fort Greene going to opera? Long story. Long story. Do we have time? Anyway,
share with us.
I picked it up through a teacher that I have. Bless her heart. She's long gone. Her name is Mrs. Ethel Mannix. She was my music teacher in elementary school. And she thought it was cool for music appreciation to teach these hood kids and the ghetto kids about this, the masters. In fact, in her room, she had these pictures of all the masters across the room, from Beethoven to Liszt. And we saw that every day we come into class. Now, they don't do that today.
If you sit there by yourself and keep looking at those, is that masturbation,
well,
basically?
Maybe it was mental masturbation. I don't know. But I would look up and say, well, what does that mean? And she played a thing called Ruby. And it fascinated me. And from then she saw it was fascinating me, so she would add more stuff until it ended up in, of all people, Wagner. That's heavy. And when I got into that, I got really into it, and I dug it, and nobody else seemed to grab hold. And for some reason, only God knows, it just sunk in. So
you went to Wagner? It's like the Third Reich put to music.
Yeah, I know. He was crazy. He's an anti-Semite. He was a bad dude. But some of the
I
stuff
like people
wrote,
who can't even say anti-Semite. No, that's a good sign.
There's so much to say it, right?
That's a good sign.
No, I know. I understand. But from a musical standpoint, he did some stuff, man. Like Tristan and Isolde, which I thought was great. The Burgermeister, I thought was great. But he was a crazy anti-Semite. That's what he was. Mm. He was a crazy dude. Unfortunately, they took a music that was just music, and Hitler used it to further push his agenda using music. I hate when they do that.
Well, he was a party guy, Adolf.
I don't know that guy.
He was short, too, you know.
Yeah, he was.
You were both short and liked Wagner. What's that say?
Springtime for Adolf.
Springtime for Hitler. That was a that was
wasn't
a
that funny? No,
that was good. Those are the producers. So how did you, Charles, how did you connect with all the guys you had to pull together for RockCon? That was pretty impressive.
That was a challenge, and it was a lot of fun. And it was really a snowball effect. You know, some heard from others. And then in Little Richard's case, I was real friends with George Dassinger, who I think, you know, coerced you to come, which I'm glad he did.
No, it's not Feinstein. It's Feinstein. It's Little Anthony, Charles.
Yes.
What'd I say?
You said Richard. Little Richard.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Sorry.
You're,
oh, dear.
You know what that means?
Him.
You're a little off, basically.
It's, yeah. Wow, I did say that. Sorry.
Feinstein. Not Feinstein.
What was the Little Richard at RockCon?
I don't know.
No, was it?
I don't know if we invited him. But, you know what I need? I need... we had a great selection of 50s, 60s, and 70s, and I think I cheated out. You know, you talked about your Black Sabbath and Metallica and all that. I think I cheated out the fans who might have come, you know, your Fangoria fans who would have rather seen the Rob Zombies, you know, the heavy metal and the punk.
Yeah.
And I think the next RockCon has to be more of a balance of that.
I was more into what you had there. I want, you know, people my own age.
Yeah.
On walkers and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, you had some great
God
people.
God knows I don't want to tell my age then. Yeah, they were walkers and stuff.
Wikipedia's out there, Anthony.
They're levitating.
They're
no
hiding anything. I like Spanky McFarlane. They
Spanky,
met there.
I
she
like
was
them.
Great.
Cool was
it
that?
Was it great?
She was wonderful.
She was
something
else. She's got that kind of personality. Man.
And Tommy James. Tell me
nice.
How he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
You know, there's a lot of people in there, Charles. You know.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Did
get
you
it.
Know somebody, Anthony? What happened?
I don't know. No. You know, I give all the credit to Billy Joel and Paul Simon and you know, guys like that who really we weren't trying to market ourselves at all. They were the ones that did it. Actually, I did a thing with Paul Simon in Brooklyn at the BAM about what is this 11? Almost three years. We did this whole thing on the Cape Man, which was a total disaster in the city as a play. But he did the thing with the music, and he thought of us that we could set the whole thing up at the time that happened. And that's when I got there. And he was just really adamant. He's going, why are you on there, you know? And Paul Schaefer, who was on the committee. And we start getting this. We didn't even – it came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, we got a groundswell. Next thing I know,
Sometimes it's who campaigns for you, huh?
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, when you have
I put in a good word, by the way, for whatever
you
did.
And Springsteen both really.
I put in a good word for Tommy James. That's why he's not in. Yeah.
Yeah, Bruce Holmcastle. We know them guys, man.
Really?
People, a lot of people. I mean, I came up with, you know, Frank Vincent.
Yeah.
And I went to that horror. It wasn't horror. It was the Gangster Museum.
Soprano guy.
Yeah. And right. then Joe Pesci and all these guys back when.
All right, we're getting ready to go. It's a shame to leave you guys, but quick plugs. Website.
www.toursandevents.com, which will have the Beatles, the Dracula, the Ghost Road, have everything, and it's TOURSANDEVENTS.com, tours and events.
Tony.
EasyFangoria.com, www.fangoria.com.
He's easy. That's what everyone says.
This is easy.
Anthony.
Little Anthony Imperials.
LittleRichard.com.
Yeah.
That's a good picture.
Try that one. It'll probably,
that's a nice picture.
Probably
you guys,
link probably. Right in the minds.
Okay, as usual, Andy, we go out with my music.
Hey, I like this.
Finally, we go out with my music. This is my single from God knows how long ago, when you were a kid, Anthony.
I thank you, baby. Thank you for saying that.
Okay, we'll be back next week with three psychics, all connected to rock. The Rock Girl, a guy who does psychic readings using cards with pictures of rock stars, and a psychic who's a rock musician.
When it comes to providing guide dogs for people who are blind or visually impaired, one national organization is taking the lead. The Guide Dog Foundation breeds and trains Labradors and Golden Retrievers to help blind and visually impaired people increase their mobility and independence. The foundation provides transportation to its New York campus, the guide dog, a comprehensive training program, and a lifetime of aftercare services, all free of charge. The benefits to training with a guide dog at the Guide Dog Foundation in Smithtown, New York are many. Among them are small class sizes for personalized attention, a long history of excellence in dog breeding, and a highly skilled professional training staff. The foundation offers a comfortable environment and diverse training areas from country walks to city subways. If you or someone you know could benefit from the foundation's free services, call 800-548-4337.
Hi, this is Dolores from Vinny's Dino. We love listening to Mark Shoemaker and Mike the Announcer on IYF Radio. Those guys say it like it is.
Hey, waitress, coffee.
Hey, I'm talking here. What's the matter? Didn't your mother feed ya? So tune in to IYF Radio on the Shentani Broadcasting Network.
Coffee, coffee.
Be quiet, I'll put a fork in your eye. So listen to Mark and Mike at IYF Radio on the Shentani Broadcasting Network. The